Y'all new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. I wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
This is the Pick Six Podcast, and this is the Divisional Round Recap Sunday Edition. That's Will Brinson. That's John Breach. I'm, of course, Ryan Wilson. And boys, starting Western New York. Got to go to Buffalo, where the Bills had beaten the Chiefs the last three times in the regular season. Patrick Mahomes, you may have heard, had never played a road playoff game after one of the best games of the season. Mahomes and the Chiefs are now 3-0 in the postseason against the old Bills. Kansas City is going to the AFC Championship game for a sixth consecutive year. In fact, Mahomes has never not played in an AFC Championship game, which is bonkers. So let's talk about the old game there. All right, Breach. I panned the Chiefs offense for no showing for much of the season. Brinson said at some point they're going to turn the corner. That corner happened to be in Buffalo on Sunday
night. I did not expect that.
It's a pretty cold weather. Hold on.
That apology to be that fast.
All right, wait a second. We'll get to you. Sit down there and relax. All right, but that wasn't the case in Buffalo, Breach. How surprised were you that the Chiefs were able to flip the switch and look like the Chiefs were used to seeing without old Tyreek Hill out there?
Well, I think we kind of said it after the Chiefs got into the playoffs, after they beat the Dolphins 26-7. They won by 19 points. Is that the Chiefs are in the playoffs? They're dangerous. Who cares what they looked like during the season? You have a quarterback who's been to five straight AFC championships, now six straight. He's got two MVPs. He's won Super Bowls. You get to the playoffs, you are automatically probably the most dangerous team in the playoffs. Now, that being said, I expected them to have some success. Actually, my final score prediction was 27-24, except I predicted the Bills to win. So offensively, it did kind of play out how I thought it would. But the fact that the Chiefs only punted one time in this game, I mean, the Bills just had no idea what to do, no idea how to stop them. And it was a mixture of things. It's not like Patrick Mahomes threw for 400 yards. He threw for 215 yards and two touchdowns. You had Pacheco coming up with a big run whenever the Chiefs needed one. I mean, you have three different guys on the Chiefs roster who had a run of at least 20 yards. That is nuts. That's not something you usually see. And so the Chiefs offense was just running pretty efficiently. And as Brinson talked about, this is what we were waiting for, is the Chiefs offense to kind of go off. And that's what happened.
What do you think, Willie Bear?
Yeah. I mean, that's what, you know, I said, I've been saying for weeks, I thought it was entirely possible that the Chiefs would just sort of flip a switch when they got to the playoffs, that we see the defenses do this all the time, that it wouldn't be that crazy if the Chiefs offense did it because they had Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid calling the plays, and Travis Kelce there, you know, two, three Hall of Fame guys. Rashee Rice has been coming on strong, and if they would stop handing Mecole Hardman the ball, they might have put this game away sooner. I do think, though, that is, you know, the Chiefs offense was impressive, but to me, the bigger story, look, the Chiefs could win the Super Bowl. Wouldn't be that shocking. You know, I think that they'll have their hands full with the Ravens, but as good as that, like, I think if you're with Baltimore, you probably would have preferred Buffalo coming in.
Yeah, we'll get to Kansas City. Let's talk about the Chiefs.
That's what I'm saying. I think that Kansas City is, it's literally what I'm doing. Yeah, I think that Kansas City is, because of Mahomes, because of Kelce, because of Andy Reid, because of how good the defense has played, although they got ran on pretty good for stretches in this game. Like, I don't know, man. I mean, it's, they have won two Super Bowls in the last 5 years, and wouldn't be surprising if they won a third.
Breach, how surprised were you with the way that Isaiah Pacheco ran? I think Nate Burleson described him in the pregame. He runs like a kid trying on a new pair of shoes, which is hysterical. And also, you can't not think about that when you see him run because he runs so hard. He didn't play in the first matchup in the game that was decided by a boneheaded play, if you will, Producer Harry, by Kadarius Toney at the end there. He played in this game, averaged 6.5 yards per carry. Clyde Edwards-Helaire spelled him a couple times, 15.5 yards per carry. And Patrick Mahomes had, you know, Josh Allen did a lot of the running, but Patrick Mahomes also had a couple nifty runs there. It didn't feel tit for tat because the rushing was certainly unbalanced in the first half in favor of the Bills. But by the time it was over, it felt like neither defense had an answer. Doesn't matter for the Bills now because they're not playing. But for the Chiefs, to Brent's point, they have some things to figure out defensively. But I was impressed with the balance on the offense.
Yeah, I think that actually played a big factor in why there weren't any sacks. I mean, Josh Allen didn't get sacked. Patrick Mahomes didn't get sacked. And when you're running the ball so efficiently, it kind of slows down the pass rush because they have to be ready to keep you from running the ball. And neither team could really do that because both these teams finished with over 140 yards rushing. For Pacheco, though, it really felt like the Chiefs' offense has evolved and it has looked much better over the past 3 or 4 weeks. And it has been with him. I mean, I remember the Bengals game. He went off against the Bengals and ran for 130 yards, I think. And it was just like, wow, he hasn't done anything like this all season. I think he had maybe one or two 100-yard games going into that game. And it was just like, wow, if he runs like this, the Chiefs can win the Super Bowl because Patrick Mahomes has a guy behind him who's putting up big yardage. He ran for almost 100 yards against the Dolphins and then comes out and runs for 97 in this game. So he's become such a key part of this offense. And that's the kind of guy that the Chiefs needed. You can have Patrick Mahomes only throw for 215 yards and win games because you have Pacheco going running like this.
Yeah, big games from MVS as well, which hadn't been the case historically. He had some struggles, but he made some big catches down the field. A couple things. I'll note this from our buddy Jay Morrison, who's a PFN now, covers the Bengals. He tweeted this at halftime when the Bills were up 17-13. The Chiefs have allowed the Bills to gain 124 yards on the ground. Since 1991, there have been 20 teams that allowed at least 124 rushing yards in the first half of a postseason game. All 20 had lost. The script was flipped, and we'll talk about why in a second. There are a couple reasons. One very notable one at the end that delves into Breach's territory, which makes him very sad. One other thing I'll mention, when Kelce scored his first touchdown in this game, that was the first time in 8 games he scored a touchdown, added another one, and now Mahomes and Kelce have 16 touchdowns in the postseason, which is best all time in human history.
That's crazy.
All right. There you go. Nice job, Producer Harry. You got the graphic, Tom Brady and Gronk behind it with 15, and then Joe Montana and Jerry Rice with 12, which is bonkers. All right, Breach, let's talk about the elephant in the room. You're a special teams correspondent. There are a couple of special teams moments in this game. I thought Jay Feely did a good job explaining the fake punt, and we'll hit on that at some point as well. But the game essentially ended when Tyler Bass honked a 43-yarder with just under 2 minutes to go. And it looked like a slice. Like, so you take us through the process. What happened? Went 1-for-3 last week against the Steelers in Buffalo, not nearly as cold. The weather's not nearly as bad. How do you miss that?
Well, I do wonder what the Bills' concern level was going into this game. Like, Tyler Bass is a pretty good kicker, but when you look at what they did in the wild card round and you have 2 missed field goals, one was blocked, but one he missed from 27 yards, you can't feel completely comfortable going into this game. And look, this is a pressure kick. The best kickers crack under pressure. You're losing. There's under 2 minutes left. If you miss this, the game is almost certainly over. The Bills did have a couple timeouts. They could have extended it if they got a stop, but all the pressure is on you, and that's not an easy thing to deal with, especially when you're kicking in 30-mile-an-hour winds. I mean, this was Tyler Bass. He didn't hit it horribly. I mean, the wind took it. He kind of cut into it, and so that's what caused it to miss. And I think that we were talking about before the podcast where this would be Tyler Bass's last game in Buffalo. And look, it is tough to mentally recover from something like this. And Harry's got the graphic up there of wide right. Jim Nantz had a fantastic call that probably had every Bills fan in tears from having
the
repressed memory of Super Bowl 25 come back in their head. Obviously, Scott Norwood going wide right in that loss to the Giants, and then Bass going wide right in this loss tonight. And look, I will say that missing a key field goal in the playoffs can be tough to mentally recover from. We've seen multiple kickers not kick for their team the next season. Blair Walsh missed that kick against the against the Seahawks. You remember that 10-9 game?
You know, let me tell you this quickly, Brick. I'm laughing because Spielman was the general manager, and he was sitting in the same angle as a lot of fans who thought the kick was good. So he found out 4 seconds later that the field goal was honked because there was a moment where a lot of people thought because it was the outdoor stadium in Minnesota for the Gophers while they were building the new one.
And it was a close one. It was a 27-yard field goal. You had Billy Cundiff, former Ravens kicker before Justin Tucker, missed a field goal against the Patriots, and that cost him. He never kicked for the Ravens again. You had Shane Graham miss a couple field goals for the Bengals in the 2009 playoffs against the Jets. He never kicked for the Bengals again. So it's just Mike Vanderjack is probably the most famous example. Ryan, against your Steelers in the 2005 playoffs, he had a 46-yard field goal, and that was the all-time. Like, when kickers miss now in this situation, you Vanderjacked it. That's kind of what happened. He missed this by 15 yards.
It was like a throw-in in soccer. He missed it so far right.
Yes, it was that bad. So, yeah, and when he goes out in the field next season, fans are going to feel uncomfortable. If he misses anything, even more uncomfortable. So it will be interesting to see how he reacts to this. But you know what? I'm not the only special teams guru. I want to know Brinson's opinion on the fake punt.
I don't know. I think DeMar Hamlin probably already had comeback player of the year sewed up. Don't think you needed to be that aggressive. As for Tyler Bass, you could say when he goes out there next year, but it's going to be a long offseason living in Buffalo if you're Tyler Bass. Like, you know, you're the opposite of, you know, Sean McDermott, Josh Allen win a Super Bowl. You'll never buy anything in Buffalo again. Tyler Bass is not getting beers purchased for him in Buffalo. He's getting beers thrown on him if he goes out in Buffalo this offseason. And so, I mean, I think from that perspective, you know, to me, it felt like Buffalo was a little wishy-washy on when they wanted to be aggressive and when they didn't want to be. I thought the whole time on that final drive they should have been playing for a touchdown. Like, force Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes already took you to overtime with 13 seconds remaining previously in Arrowhead because you know, just the foibles of that. Like, don't play for a field goal. Don't play for overtime. Don't play to give Patrick Mahomes a minute and 45 seconds left. I mean, go win the – like, play – every play call from Joe Brady to Josh Allen should have been designed to like, potentially go for it on fourth down. And I thought that not doing that was kind of a disservice, especially if you're out there running fake punts. You know, you're kind of being aggressive on fourth down. You know, it didn't feel like that coaching staff was ever truly comfortable, except for the one stretch where they just pounded the ball in that run game, the same way they did against Dallas during the regular season. It never felt like they were truly comfortable, you know? And I get that fourth and nine, you can't go for it there. You got to kick it from the 26. But on third and nine, I would have called a different play, whether it was a draw or a short pass, something to set up a possible decision to go for it on fourth down, because you're talking about a minute 43 left. Even if you make the field goal, I think there's a really good chance Mahomes gets Harrison Butker in range to beat you.
And all I think that's why Brett's point makes sense real quick, is just because even if he makes a field goal, the game's not over. It's not over at all. So it's crazy, after letting the Chiefs score in 13 seconds 2 years ago, they thought letting him score and, you know, 147 or whatever it would have taken.
Well, let's talk about that final drive. But before we do that, Breach, do you want to comment on why the fake punt was a thing that happened early in the fourth quarter when it was 27-24?
Look, Jay Feely had the best theory, which was the Chiefs had 10 guys on the field. And so was it called or was it audibled into? That's what I would
like to know. He seemed to think that it was audibled into.
And if that is, that's oof, oof.
But here's the thing. If you get it, and it was third and five from your own 30-yard line, if you get it, then we're yelling about why the special teams on the Chiefs suck so bad, why they have 10 guys out there. Because that's the conversation we had in the Ohio State-Notre Dame game. Twice they had 10 guys on the field at the end of that game, and we're still talking about it whenever that game comes up. They got
lucky.
But if
you don't get it against 10 guys, that's pretty ugly.
Now, what happens next, of course, is the Mecole Hardman situation, but we'll circle back to that. Let's go to the final drive. So here's the thing about, and I get what you guys are saying. I'm not sure. I thought Joe Brady did a great job for 50 minutes, maybe even 52 or 3 minutes of this game. I thought they did a great job. They could not stop their run. Tony Romo pointed out a lot. They had six offensive linemen on the field and very few times were able to slow up what they were doing run-wise, whether it was James Cook or Mr. Josh Allen. But that last drive, here's how the drive started. Where were they?
Stephon Diggs
on their own 20. Diggs drop on a 85-yard bomb. Hit him literally in both hands. Look, I get it. If you're MVS and you drop that, whatever. Justin Watson drops it, I get it. Stephon Diggs, who had a very little impact in this game, especially in the second half, you got to catch that ball. So that happens. Then Josh Allen tries to take over, and he fumbles on the third down run. And Tamari Connor, oh my God, just fall on the football, number 27. Instead, he tried to pick it up. They recovered it. Great play by Dawson Knox or Dalton Kincaid to get the ball back. And they go for it on fourth down. They get it. Great play call there to Khalil Shakir on the left side to move the sticks. And then after that, Spags started dialing to pressure, and Josh Allen had very little opportunity to set his feet and throw the football. And I thought that was the best series by a million miles for the Chiefs defense. So I'm not going to fault Joe Brady for not getting the ball in the end zone. Maybe to Brinson's point, you could have an opportunity to set up two plays on third and fourth down.
Yeah, it wasn't so much a Joe Brady criticism as it was a sort of a holistic approach. I don't think Joe Brady gets to make the call on the fourth down stuff. I think that's all McDermott. It was more like you have let this team rip your heart out so many times in the postseason. You got to go get a touchdown and just not give Mahomes a chance to like go win it with a field goal with a minute 43 and two timeouts.
Also worth noting. Yeah, I agree with that. The other thing I want to point out, and you guys can weigh in on this. I thought Josh Allen played zero YOLO ball until that last drive that we're talking about here. He had three turnover worthy plays, two picks, and then the fumble. They avoided all three. So you include the, I don't want to call it a naughty word. The thing that Mecole Hardman did, he had two fumbles today. One that cost them at least 3 points, probably 7 points.
He has no business being on the field in the playoffs right now. He's been terrible.
No business. But no was there business. Any concern? It doesn't matter now. The season's over. That Josh Allen was showing signs of YOLOing it up, or was that just him having to make things happen late in the game?
I think it was probably just him pressing later. By the way, we talk about Tyler Bass not being on this team. You know who else might not be on this team next year? Stephon Diggs.
I thought you were going to say Sean McDermott.
Oh, how dare you, sir.
I don't think that's completely out of the question. I mean, it would be weird to fire a guy after making it to the, you know, losing like that in the divisional round against a Hall of Fame quarterback. But, you know, the 90s Bulls bad boy Piston vibes are very much real right now with the Bills and the Chiefs. And, or I don't even know if there's a comp for when Brady and the, you know, like, because the Ravens made it past them. I mean, maybe the Steelers, I don't know if the Steelers even worse, because the Bills just haven't gotten past the Chiefs. They just can't get past the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs. Diggs, though, remember this past offseason, because of the way they went out last year because of the way they went out last year, there was all that chatter surrounding Stephon Diggs, and then you have him go out and just drop a huge, just a pass, an incredible pass from Josh Allen. And great job by Jim Nantz calling it live in real time. It hit him just right in the hands. Like, you have to catch that if you're a top-tier wide receiver in the NFL. And I could just see some drama surrounding Diggs and that whole situation again this offseason, which wouldn't shock me if it led to maybe his ouster in Buffalo.
And, Wilson, you just went through this whole final drive. Let me point out that the Bills had – first and 10 at the Chiefs 27-yard line with 2 minutes and 42 seconds left in the game, and they botched that. I mean, that is
bad.
And to Brinson's point where he said, we've been talking about why are you kicking this field with 147 left, you ran it on first down, and then you ran the clock down to the 2-minute warning because you don't want to leave a lot of time, and then incomplete, and you left a lot of time. So it's, you got to pick a strategy and kind of stick with it, where make the Chiefs use their timeouts. If you want to run it three times or run it twice and throw it on third down or whatever, it just seemed like they were caught in between what they wanted to do. Yeah. So to only burn 13 more seconds off the clock on two downs and then not even gain a yard so that your kicker's stuck with a not very easy field goal on windy conditions, that's what you get.
I wonder if that first run that got stopped, if that was a turning point, because they averaged 5 yards a carry, and most of those felt like they were 8, 9, 10 yards a carry the way they were dragging guys down the field. Tony Romo at one point couldn't quit talking about how the interior offensive line for the Bills kept displacing, is the word he used, the Chiefs defensive line. And I think on that play, they sent 8 or 9 guys. And I don't know if they panicked or like, all right, we got to get this thing going. But I don't disagree. I'm okay with using Josh. You use Josh Allen's legs the entire day. And I was thinking throughout the game, how many hits do you want this guy to take? But I'm like, well, if you win the Super Bowl, he can rest up in the offseason. He probably feels the same way. But he took some licks today more than I was accustomed to him.
He had Shakir wide open across the middle in the end zone on that first play, the second down coming out of the 2-minute warning too, right? I mean, like that was...
I think he had Diggs on the under, but Chris Jones hit him in the face.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying like it was like a bad, like a total egg. He just had him. And if he, you know... You got to be careful. You don't want to throw it up there. You can't, you know, can't have an interception or anything like that. But
yeah, you don't want to Jordan Love
it. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's sort of like it's almost like the fact that they picked up that first down that Breach mentioned with 2:42 left that got them inside of field goal range, like comfortable field goal range. You feel like at that point they decided to change sort of their process and say, okay, we are close enough. Let's not give away this field goal. And that playing scared like that against Patrick Mahomes is just a bad way to approach it. You just got to like go and like go get the touchdown and then force Mahomes to go score a touchdown of his own with, you know, 30 seconds left or something like that. And he could easily do it, but at least make him go do it. I hate putting it on a kicker's leg in this spot.
I'd be interested what you guys think. I don't fault the Bills at all. I just think that the defense for the Chiefs finally showed up on that final drive. Fantastic timing. And they just got outplayed over the final 4.5 minutes. I think that's it. Like, I don't know what else I would do differently, because the way that Spagnuolo was dialing things up, I thought they were working. Is that more complicated than that?
I mean, the Bills offense struggled the fourth quarter. The fake punt came on a 3-and-out, which really became a 4-and-out. And then after that, they got the ball back after the fumble save their lives. They get the ball back on the touchback. They go 3-and-out again, and before putting together that drive that went down to get the missed field goal. So they did nothing in the fourth quarter. It's kind of like watching the Packers 49ers game, where the Packers moved the ball up and down the field the whole game and then disappeared in the fourth quarter.
Here's the length of the Bills. So here's the Bills drives: 14 plays, 70 yards, field goal; 11 plays, 75 yards, touchdown; 5 plays, 15 yards, punt; 12 plays, 75 yards, touchdown, halftime. One drive in the third quarter, by the way, 15 plays, 75 yards. That was the long running drive where they ate up 8 minutes and 25 seconds of game clock. 15 plays, 75 yards, and that touchdown. And then 4 plays, 7 yards; 3 plays, negative 2 yards; 16 plays, 54 yards. And I think to Breach's point about the fourth quarter, you can't have those two drives where you completely stall out. And then you really can't have a 16-play drive where you're setting up what did the distance end up being for Bass there at the end?
44.
You can't have a 16-play drive where you're setting up a 44-yard field goal and you leave a minute and a half left on the clock. Like the parameters of that are just don't work. If you're gonna have a 16-play drive, it needs to be setting up a chip shot game-winning field goal or a chip shot field goal that sends the game into overtime and gives no chance. Like, if you kick the field goal and it goes to overtime and there's no time on the clock, that's one thing. You can't leave even 13 seconds. We learned that the hard way.
Well, the other thing, I mean, we can dump on Tyler Bass all we want. Isaiah Pacheco came out and ran for 9 yards and then ran for 3 yards, game over. Like, that defense didn't put up any fight at the end. And It feels like the Bills offense ran for 5 million yards and the Chiefs didn't do much of anything. But at the end of the day, it was the Chiefs that had certainly more successful runs and more important runs in terms of the timing of the game. So I think there's plenty of blame to go around. I don't want to blame Tyler Bass. I feel bad for him just for Breach's sake.
I wouldn't blame the defense either, because they came up with a fumble that saved the game. If the Chiefs get a touchdown there, the game's over, Wilson.
Yeah.
They knocked it out and got the turnover, and then the Chiefs got the ball back after the offense went three and out, and they forced another punt. So they got the ball back twice with the score 27-24, and the offense just wasn't able to do anything. So, I mean, yeah, you can blame them for that, not being able to tackle Pacheco on that final series, but they almost looked defeated at that point. Missed field goal. We got two stops. What can we even do to you just succumb to the history of Bills football that no matter what you do, you're always going to end up losing in a playoff game, and it's painful.
I didn't see that coming. I stood up for Tyler Bass, and Breach turned the tables on me.
Chiefs had 5 third downs. That's it. They had 361 yards, 7.7 yards per play, 47 total plays, 1 of 5 on third down, 2 of 4 in the red zone. Buffalo, 7 of 14 on third down, 2 of 3 on fourth down, 3 of 4 in the red zone, 2 of 2 in goal to go. The Chiefs were 2 of 4 in goal to go. And averaged 4.7 yards per play. I think a lot of that final drive probably brought down their yards per play. Look, I mean, I'll say this too about this game. I think it is very similar to what we got in the Rams and the Lions game. It was a fantastic football game. It was one of those, I think our buddy Nick Costas pointed this out over text or maybe Twitter or something like that. But it's one of those where, like, you were nervous watching. I was nervous watching the game. Like, I was like, I mean, it just felt, it was so intense, and it was really well played until the very end. And there's a couple of things just like that Rams Lions game, where you can kind of nitpick and say this or this. I mean, obviously you can nitpick the missed field goal and setting that whole thing up. You know, you can nitpick giving it to Mecole Hardman at the goal line, but by and large, a really, really great football game. That, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, one of these, you know, two really good teams was going to win, one was going to lose, and it's probably the difference in the Bills having a chance to finally win a Super Bowl and Mahomes maybe getting a third.
Yeah, the Chiefs did it on the road, and they did it with them making a bunch of boneheaded mistakes. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back. We'll talk about what this Chiefs has to do in order to get over the hump, and does it include Josh Allen somehow having to do more than he currently does? Right after this.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, Breach, I'll ask you. Producer Harry has this question in the rundown, and I think it's a fair question. Does Josh Allen have to be Superman for the Bills to win? Because I feel like he was as close to Superman as you could get for 58 and a half minutes on Sunday night.
Yeah, I mean, apparently he has to be. He led the team in rushing. He scored 2 touchdowns. He threw for 186 yards, which could have been better if he didn't have a couple drops. I mean, if Stephon Diggs catches that 60-yard bomb, now Josh Allen's having a 250-yard game with 72 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns. So it's, you know, he's probably wondering what he has to do, and I don't know what the answer is for the Bills at this point. I thought this was the Bills' best shot at beating the Chiefs. You got them in Buffalo finally. You have your home crowd. Josh Allen's playing great football, and Patrick Mahomes doesn't have any weapons except for an aging Travis Kelce, who finally showed up and actually looked awesome. But the Chiefs just, it's the Wile E. Coyote trying to chase the Roadrunner here. That's what it feels like with the Bills. I don't feel good about the Bills ever beating the Chiefs in the playoffs. It doesn't feel like, you know, we were talking about what changes they need to make, and all these guys, Brinson mentioned, maybe Stephon Diggs isn't there next year, and that there's going to be kind of an overhaul. And also, you know, you're looking at the 5-year rule, which is, I think it's no team has ever had a starting quarterback and a head coach together and not win a Super Bowl within 5 years and then end up winning one after that.
Nice.
So it's, you know, you don't start over. You've got Josh Allen and you're going to be a playoff team as long as you have Josh Allen. But what do you have to do to get over the hump? Because whatever they're doing isn't working.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is one of those situations where, and I think you tend to see this in college a little bit more than the NFL maybe, but Sean McDermott and I don't want to say Brandon Bean, because I think Brandon Bean would stick around in this particular scenario, but Sean McDermott has gotten, like, the question, here's the question. Has Sean McDermott gotten the Bills to their ceiling under Sean McDermott? Like, can the Bills win a Super Bowl with Sean McDermott? And I don't know if the answer is yes, but I also don't know if the answer is because of Sean McDermott. It may just very well be incredibly similar to what happened for 20 plus years with the Patriots, where you had Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, and beating them is really hard, and it happens once every couple of years, and somebody sneaks into the AFC and steals the Super Bowl, and otherwise you're just sort of dealing with that a lot. And I mean, like, that was the case with a ton of teams for years in the AFC. And, you know, granted, the Ravens got through and got a Super Bowl. The Broncos got through and got a Super Bowl. You know, the Steelers had two in that time span, I guess, right? Both of those were in that time span. Right? Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, like, the issue is that it just magnifies everything when there's this one team you can't get past. Like, that was the whole thing with the Bulls and the Pistons in the 90s, was it was like, the Bulls just can't beat this team. Like, they're going to have to face them, and you don't get a 7-game series to do it. You get one game, and in that one game, it's almost like the personality of the coach is so important. And then you look, and I see Adam Schefter just tweeted this out a second ago, but here's a list of Bills free agents this offseason. Gabe Davis, Micah Hyde, Leonard Floyd, Tyrell Dodson, Dane Jackson, A.J. Epinesa, Taylor Rapp, Daquan Jones, Tim Settle, Jordan Phillips, Puna Ford, Linville Joseph, Shaq Lawson, Trent Sherfield, David Edwards, Latavius Murray, Ty Johnson, Damian Harris, Cameron Lewis, and Kyle Allen. Now, some of those guys don't matter, but that's a bunch of defensive players. And I think you could make the case that, like, I don't see how you could, like, move it on in a different direction from a coaching perspective. But, like, what if it just feels like you're butting up against a wall, and the only reaction is to try to bring in somebody, especially like would Jim Harbaugh take the Buffalo job right now? He would, right?
I don't know.
Would Belichick?
What you just said about, has McDermott hit his ceiling? This is three straight seasons they've been knocked out in the divisional round, because the last year lost to the Bengals, and obviously the 13-second loss 2 years ago to the Chiefs, and so that's what you've done since your AFC title game appearance in 2020, which was also a loss to the Chiefs. And it does feel like there's that hump you just can't get over.
Right. And a lot of times the answer for billionaires when you can't get over that hump is to, and I don't think we're going to I don't think we're going to hear Sean McDermott's fired tomorrow or anything like that. But if the Bills decided, if you were going to make a move, if you're Buffalo, it's pretty rare when you can say there's definitely an upgrade out there. Like, every single coach, like, the Bills would obviously move to the immediate top of the list in terms of the coaching jobs available. And if I was Terry Pegula, I would say, Sean, you've done an incredible job getting us to a spot where we are perennially contending. I think you were an elite coach. I think that we may just have hit our ceiling. And then I would go give Jim Harbaugh $20 million a year. Bring him to Buffalo and let him win a championship, because I think he would.
Okay, that sounds wild to me, given how successful Sean McDermott's been. And the grass isn't always greener. But, I mean, look, if that's what Mr. Pegula wants to do, that's certainly his prerogative. But, and I know there's been, you know, the Tyler Dunn story came out, and there's some things going on the inside. But that seemed to galvanize that team. And I don't think they lost today because of Sean McDermott.
Well, and to be clear, the Bills were, as I'm sure many people are aware, my Super Bowl pick before the season. And I doubled down on it. So I'm not saying, like, I like the Bills. I just wonder how – I think the impact of a playoff loss in which you miss wide right for the third – losing to the Chiefs for the third time, and you lost to the Bengals too – And it feels like these other teams in the AFC have this sort of edge somehow to get further in the playoffs than you do, despite having all these great players. I just wonder if there might be a sense of like, we need to make a change sometimes just for change's sake. I'm not advocating for it.
Yeah. Brits is not saying that Sean McDermott should be fired. It's just look at the Eagles, where there was, hey, Nick Sirianni just led us to a Super Bowl, but maybe we're unhappy. Look at the Cowboys, where Mike McCarthy had to get a vote of confidence, even though he's gone 12-5 for three straight seasons, where you have these crazy rich guys just get an itchy finger of, why can't we get to the Super Bowl when Patrick Mahomes does it every year? What do I need to do? And sometimes, you know, we saw Sean McDermott fire Ken Dorsey, you know, and obviously that decision worked out, but now
Belichick just got fired. Like,
right. Anybody can get fired. Even though you fired Dorsey, you're back where you were at the end of last season, at the end of the season before that. And so it's how many times can you rearrange the deck chair? So it's just kind of one of those things where, look, McDermott's done a fantastic job. I think he's a great coach. It's more of what would an owner decide? Billionaires are fickle people. I'm not one.
And let's not forget that, you know, I mean, look, again, I'm not arguing that this should happen. I'm just saying that, you know, McDermott, he's a very, he got fired by Andy Reid in Philadelphia. And I think that as much as there's a Chiefs own the Bills in the postseason, there's also a Andy kind of owns Sean in the postseason thing too. That I feel like he's maybe softly bubbling up a bit around this matchup.
Okay. We shall see. All right, let's talk about the other game.
There's another game.
There was another game. What? Feels like it was 3 days ago. Be aggressive. Be aggressive. Producer Harry says, as the headline for this game. Dan Campbell biting kneecaps, galvanizing a city to the point where everyone in that town loves Jared Goff. If I told you when Jared Goff was traded, I think in 2021, that he would be the most popular person in that town, what do you think would have had to have happened for that to be the case? Because it would certainly be non-football related.
He rented a private jet or bought a private jet, tricked Aaron Rodgers and Kirk Cousins into going up in air with him, jumped out in a parachute with like nobody piloting the plane, and didn't leave any parachutes in there. And so the Lions just put default took over he took all the Packers quarterbacks. I don't know, like something outrageous to
the old Indiana Jones trick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Got to jump out with the inner tube there. Well, Jared Goff had the best performance of certainly on Sunday's action. 30-43 for 287, two touchdowns, no interceptions. Baker, of course, threw for 349, but he did have the two picks. One on the first drive where Mike Evans let a ball go through his hands. And let's start here. Let's start with C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who won the game and won the battle of social media cut-down contest with Baker Mayfield, who was just minding his own business when CJ said that if they had a better quarterback, this team could be really good. Any thoughts on old CJ getting an interception?
First, he trash-talked Baker Mayfield all week, and this was not Baker Mayfield's fault at all.
Not at all.
The pass went through Mike Evans' hands, but I cannot believe he didn't get flagged. I mean, he literally took the football and tossed it at Baker Mayfield as if to shove all the trash talking down his throat and be like, I got the best of you. When, again, Baker Mayfield made a great throw and it just went through Mike Evans' hands. And then it ends up in CJ Gardner-Johnson's hands and then back in Baker Mayfield's hands. So I was actually shocked that there was no flag there. I mean, it was kind of hilarious to see that in a playoff game, though, where – I mean, the NFL does not like when you taunt the opponent. And I would think that taking the ball you intercepted and tossing it back to the quarterback who threw the pass would count as taunting.
I would concur with Mr. Breach there. By the way, divisional, you know, this is like widely considered by a lot of people the best weekend in football, best football weekend of the year, maybe, however you want to phrase it. And even if Saturday didn't necessarily deliver the goods from a, you know, like you got one good game and one game that wasn't very close. I mean, these two games Sunday were outstanding. The Lions and the Bucs started a little slow. You tell teams are kind of feeling each other out, and then it started getting loose. And I thought Baker played pretty well. I thought Baker was awesome. Jared Goff was awesome too. Like, all four quarterbacks today played really well. Goff and the Lions were just better, a little bit better, you know? And I think They didn't feel like they were pulling that far away. You know, it almost didn't feel like they won by 8 points. They did 31-23, of course. Tampa Bay couldn't run the ball. The Lions could. Jahmyr Gibbs is freaking great. Constantly have been taken away for me with the Lions is that this rookie draft class for them changed everything. I mean, Brian Burns, Jack Campbell, Jahmyr Gibbs, Sam Laporta, just to name like four guys right off the top who are just impact guys. You see that? Most scrimmage TD by a rookie in Lions history, behind only Billy Sims in 1980 and Barry Sanders in 89. Jahmyr Gibbs with 13 scrimmage touchdowns. He has been a game changer and way more important than Bijan Robinson this season.
Yeah, I was thinking about Bijan during that game and why Arthur Smith no longer has a job because he refused to use Bijan and Drake London and Kyle Pitts properly. Shout out to Ben Johnson for actually using Jahmyr Gibbs the right way. But I'll say this, Breach. Early in the season, Jahmyr didn't play a lot. They leave him David Montgomery. I think that having those two guys in the backfield together has made it easier for both of them. But Jahmyr Gibbs was absolutely electric. Average 8.2 yards per run. And he's also an asset in the pass game. Had four catches for 40 yards there. But that's what he did at Alabama. So no surprise. And I don't think it's wild to say that drafting him 12th was overdrafting, because he's like Christian McCaffrey. And that's what he told us at the combine. That's who he sort of patterned his game after. He does more than just run the ball. And he certainly makes life easy for Jared Goff. But here's something that I was thinking about. They struggled a little bit to stop Rashad Wright running the ball. And that's a problem, because this defense has at times not been great. They were better earlier in the year, and they've gotten sort of Cam Sutton had a very long afternoon. After Mike Evans dropped that ball, he lit his ass up. I think he had four catches for 97 yards in the first half, including that one down to the 2-yard line at the end of the half on a great drive by Baker to get them in the end zone there. I'm a little concerned what this looks like next week if you can't stop the run, but we can get to that. But that's just something that crossed my mind. A huge win, and you know, I would imagine, Breach, that felt for those Lions fans a lot like it felt for you once the Bengals finally got to the Super Bowl.
I mean, it's the same where first they went to the wild card round and you end the 30-year drought. We saw people crying. We saw old people who have waited their whole entire life for this team to end this drought. And you get emotional. And then to win this playoff game, the thing is, it really felt like the fans kind of expected Detroit to win this, because I thought Ford Field seemed like it was in shock when the Buccaneers tied this at 10 right before the half. It really quieted things down. And then the Buccaneers had the ball first possession of the second half, and they drove quickly into Detroit territory. Everybody just shell-shocked. And, you know, the Buccaneers probably could have gotten a field goal, but I think Aiden Hutchinson came up with a huge sack on Baker Mayfield that knocked him out of field goal range. Yep. But, yeah, I mean, this is what you have been waiting for. It's hard to put something like this into perspective, except that it is emotional. And now you have your team going to an NFC title game for the first time since 1991. And Lions fans should just enjoy it. Soak up every single second, because you don't know when this is going to happen again. I'm sure in 1991, they're thinking, we have Barry Sanders. We have the best running back in the NFL. We're going to every NFC title game for the rest of the 90s. And then, you know, now we're 2023 and you're just getting back there for the 2024. And you're just getting back there. So, yeah, soak all of this up, Lions fans.
Well, I will be curious to see, you know, I thought Detroit did a really good job of, and not that I expect them to be because they were at home, but, you know, like you don't want to be satisfied. You don't want to be happy that you're, you know, like you don't be like, all right, we finally won a wild card round. And I think Dan Campbell's done a great job of keeping that team level. And Jared Goff, you know, we talked about this before, but, you know, Jared Goff has been to a Super Bowl. You know, this is not somebody coming of age and trying to figure out how to play in the playoffs. He's played well in the playoffs before, helped get the Rams there. They really could have won the title in 2018 pretty easily if Belichick hadn't come up with that plan. But it doesn't feel like, I don't know, it feels like the Lions are getting right at the right time. I am very curious to know if, and I think we talked about this last night, but how much of San Francisco and Baltimore, or maybe I talked about it this morning, but did San Francisco and Baltimore start slow because we hadn't seen them in a while, right? And is San Francisco going to come out guns blazing against the Lions next weekend? I think I have an idea. What do you think that line is, Wilson? What's wins over Wilson? Peg Lions at Niners.
I want it to be 1 point lower than what I'm going to say. I'm going to guess 7.5.
It is 7, and it looks like it's going to go down to 6.5.
Yeah, that's what wins over Wilson, like 6.5. One thing I'll note, I saw this on Twitter from Greg Chandler, who I think covers the Lions in Detroit. He wrote, the Lions have just won more playoff games in the last 8 days than the previous 66 years, which that's is amazing. Awesome.
And mentioning Jared Goff real quick, I want to throw out what he did in the fourth quarter, 11 of 12 for 131 yards.
He's been clutch, man.
That's as clutch as it gets. That's when you put this game away. This game was tied up at 17, and then Goff decided to go off. That was it. I mean, he played a nearly perfect fourth quarter and put this game away. So, I mean, every reason, everybody I feel like wants to doubt Jared Goff because it's like, well, Sean McVay got rid of him and he's a cast off from the Rams and there's no possible way he can lead the Detroit Lions to the Super Bowl. But now they're one game away. And I do love that this came on, what, the 3-year anniversary of Dan Campbell's kneecap
speech. Well, a lot of cold takes. I know that's crazy. A lot of cold takes on the kneecap press conference. I'm sure I've got one out there too. I would say with Goff too, and this kind of goes back to the Sean McDermott conversation, but this Lions team and this Lions coaching staff, when Jared Goff goes out there in the fourth quarter in big spots, he doesn't have to wonder, are they going to ask me to throw it or are they going to try and melt clock and run the football? He knows they're going to ask him to throw it. He knows they're going to be aggressive, as Harry popped up, and that they are going to try and ice the game away and not give the other team a chance to come back by virtue of, you know, they're not going to run the ball three times, try to melt the clock and burn the timeouts. They're going to let Jared Goff throw it. And we've seen that the last two games in these big spots in the playoffs. And I think that's a major advantage in the postseason when you, not necessarily that you are aggressive, but that you have an identity that your players trust and understand. And they know when you get to these big moments, win, lose, or draw, that you're going to keep your foot on the gas. Like, I think having that mentality and that approach in the postseason and just that consistent approach is really critical to winning in the postseason.
Yeah, I'll go back to that Dallas game in the regular season where you guys were giving me a hard time. I was like, yeah, Dan Campbell's like, we're going for it. Whatever happens, happens. It doesn't matter. Number two, number three seed. And that's just sending a message to everyone else and to the locker room that we're biting kneecaps. And I think the confidence with which Jared Goff is playing has a lot to do with how he's been treated since he's gotten there. And I, you know, ask Jordan Love if confidence is important. I mean, he was sitting behind Aaron Rodgers for a few years. He probably didn't know what his future was going to be. And all these guys are good, man. I mean, so it's just a matter of getting everyone to believe what you're doing. And I don't know if there's any team better than the Lions in terms of getting these guys motivated. Not to throw a wet blanket on this, but I looked this up during the game because I was curious, because Cade Otton went off, which is something you don't typically say. The Lions ranked 32nd in the NFL last month and a half of this regular season against tight ends.
George Kittle.
Yeah. Follow-up to that, they ranked 32nd against wide receivers as well. They gave over 230 yards to wide receivers. So Mike Evans is no longer playing, but he was Exhibit A, and Exhibit B will be Brandon Ayuk and perhaps Debo, who we talked about last night, if he's healthy enough to go. But that's a conversation for later. Right now we're celebrating the Lions doing something that they had not done in over 66 years. Breach, anything you want to add to what we got there?
Goff's most clutch throw. It was 24-17, Lions facing 3rd and 15 from their own 44. And if they have to punt there, they're only up a touchdown. Instead, boom, 16-yard laser to Monroe St. Brown. You get the first down. You score a touchdown on that drive. And at that point, it felt like game over. I mean, 31-17, obviously game over. But that play felt like game over, that one play.
I feel like, and we'll take a break in a second, I feel like, to follow up on what Brenton said about the previous game, I think that I think the Bucs played a better second half than the Bills did. Like, the way Baker was dealing, Dave Canales, first-time play caller, hadn't called plays before at all. And no, I'm not crapping on Joe Brady, but just in terms of that last drive there, it felt like, to Brenton's point, this game was a lot closer than it ended up being, just because it was sort of back and forth.
It didn't feel like an 8-point game. Hot topic of discussion was the going for two down 14. I know we've covered that, but...
Breach had a nice little tweet about it.
What would you have done, Benson?
You go there. I mean, I understand that it's it's like hard math to wrap your head around, or hard game theory, whatever you want to call it. But the logic is this. You have, it's like, what, 55% chance of getting a two-point conversion, roughly? And look, I think that personnel matters, coaching, like who your coach is matters, and your play call matters a ton in these spots. Like, you can't just, the Panthers can't just go out there and do this every, you know, go for two, like it doesn't mean anything. You need to have the proper personnel in place. I think Tampa Bay does. But you go for two when you're down 14 in the fourth quarter, because if you get the two-point conversion, you can then, look at producer Harry. This is the math. You go for two. If you convert, you kick the extra point, you're up one, and you win in regulation. And that is the difference to me, is that you can still get to over. Overtime is a field goal, is a coin toss, a literal coin toss. It is a coin toss, 50-50 chance of whether or not you'll win. So the percent chance of getting one of those two convert or getting that first conversion is higher than that. That's why it makes sense. You also have to convert the extra points. You can see the math on the screen. But to me, it does make sense to go for two.
Yeah. I mean, that's the simple explanation. If you kick the extra point, your best case scenario is taking the game to overtime.
Correct.
And if you make the two-point conversion, now your best case scenario becomes winning the game. And that's essentially what it comes down to. I do think, you know, Brinson mentioned who you have on your offense and who your play caller is, and that factors into it. But I do think the actual situation itself needs to factor into it. Like 4 minutes left in a playoff game versus 4 minutes left in the regular season. If I'm Tampa Bay, I'm okay. I think the longer a game lasts as a road underdog, the better you have a chance of winning it, just because you're kind of keeping you get the crowd out of it. The math makes sense. The math absolutely makes sense, but I was torn on this one. I don't think an extra point would have been crazy.
You know what also helps here? If Mike Evans jumps up straight for the ball instead of sort of backpedals, because I think
or runs through and draws the flag, and then you just quarterback sneak it. The other thing too is that I do understand the argument, the psychological argument, that if you don't get the 2-point conversion, that your team feels like you are down, you're only down one possession because you still have the 2-point conversion to go for. But it's tough to take from the team's mentality. But you're also just down eight. You know, the extra points are harder than they used to. I understand going for it. I think it's more commonplace and more accepted now than it used to be. But I can see the argument against it in certain spots. I would have gone for it.
All right, there you go. I don't have an issue going for it. Makes sense to me too.
Okay, but if we want to grill a Todd Bowles decision, here's one. How about using your freaking timeout at the end of the game? The Buccaneers had one timeout, and Jared Goff kneeled it with 36 seconds left, and Tampa Bay just on third down. And the Bucs just let the clock run out. You call a timeout and you make them try a field goal. So who knows if they even try the field goal. So Detroit had the ball at Tampa Bay's 30-yard line. So if you call and you lose a yard on the kneel down, say 31, if you call the timeout, it is now 4th and 13. So either the Lions are going to punt it or run around for 5 seconds and chuck it in the end zone, or try a field goal. And a field goal is not a gimme from 49 yards. If you block it, if they miss it, you get the ball at the 39-yard line. You need 61 yards to tie the game, and you have 34 seconds, or probably 5 seconds off the clock. You have 29 seconds, but it blows my mind that a coach in the playoffs would go home with the timeout in a one-score game where they could have gotten the Buccaneers offense would have gotten the ball back.
It was fourth down. Like, even if they make the field goal, you're getting the ball back. Like, you could, if they make the field goal, maybe you return the kick to midfield. You take one shot, make one quick play, kick the field goal, and then go for an onside. It's like, you have to extend the game. It was insane that he did that.
All right. Todd Bowles will have a long time to think about that. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up here and get our MVPs as well right after this.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, Brinson, Baker Mayfield is out of contract, signed a one-year, $4 million deal. Is there any way Tampa Bay doesn't re-sign him?
Only if somebody else offers him a ton of money and Tampa is trying to be cheap about it, or Dave Canales lands a head coaching job. I guess those things could all factor into it. But I do think there's a really good relationship with Todd Bowles there. There's a really good relationship with the GM, Jason Light. And I would be very surprised if Baker Mayfield did not come back to Tampa Bay.
Breach, do you franchise him? I'm only half kidding.
If he wants $50 million a year, then maybe. I think they want it. Both sides would want to work something out. So I think they'll work something out.
I mean, he said, I think the quote was, "This is the most comfortable I've been in my entire career." And, you know, it's a low pressure situation. Maybe Belichick comes to the Falcons, or somebody good comes to the Falcons, and the division is a little bit tougher next year. But by and large, I mean, the Buccaneers, we all collectively whiffed on Tampa Bay. Pete Prisco is the only person I know who was trying to suggest that Tampa could be an issue this year, maybe outside of some local people. And, you know, in hindsight, you look, I mean, I know they were like, what, 4-7 at one point. So, I mean, that's, you know, it's easy to say that now that they made the playoffs, but really, like they should have been the clear favorite to win the division. And they were the longest shot to win the division.
And like we said last week, their players tried to tell us that.
Yep.
Tristan Wirfs was like, we're going to the playoffs. Just sign us up. Right. And you don't hear players say that often. So hopefully we don't overlook them next year.
I do remember thinking, and I didn't say this. I mean, like, you have to take me on my word here, but I do remember thinking that it's like, man, this is like, whether is it going to be the Falcons or the Saints thing is a little too, maybe the Panthers are involved. It's a little bit too easy, right? Like, Tampa's just not going to be involved in the playoff hunt at all in this terrible division. In hindsight, should have listened to Spidey sense.
Quickly, Baker ranked 59th in terms of average annual value this year among quarterbacks. Let's play a quick game here. I'll name some names. You tell me whether they made more or less than Baker Mayfield. Kenny Pickett.
More.
More?
Less.
Really?
Marcus Mariota.
Less.
More.
More.
Wow. God, 0 for 2.
And one last.
Kenny Pickett made less than Baker on a rookie deal?
Oh, because you get the big signing bonus and the small salary.
Yeah, just the average, right.
We would have gotten that if we thought about it.
Yeah, average annual value. All right, we'll do one more here. Andrew James Dalton, whatever Dalton's middle name is.
Andrew Gregory Dalton.
Yeah.
More.
More.
$5 million.
All right. What did Baker make this year?
Four.
That is crazy.
He made more than Baker. He made bonuses too.
Yeah.
I'm just going with the average annual value breach.
But Baker also former number one overall pick. So, I mean, he's, you know, and he has all that sweet, sweet progressive money. So it's not like he's, you know,
suffering. That's all he got, Breach. 1-4, according to Spot Track. I don't know. It doesn't mention bonus.
Well, he won, like, he got the bonus for winning the division. I think he got $250,000 bonus for winning a playoff game. And he had at least another $1 million. He had bonuses for finishing the top 10 and key passing stats. So I think he made closer to $6 million when all the bonuses are factored in, but that was his base salary. So your game was correct.
They don't have that.
I just don't want people to think Baker's poor.
Go ahead and set the numbers. Well, to be fair, Andy Dalton probably won all those things for all the playoff games he won this year, too. All right, let's go to the MVPs. Who wants to go first?
If Brinson doesn't want to, I can go. I'm ready.
I'll go. Oh, I got one.
Nah. He's going to steal Mike. I already told
him. I highly doubt him with Steelers. My Brinson VP goes to Lions center Frank Ragnow. Chris Collinsworth rightly praised him during that game. Ragnow has suffered some like serious injuries this season and is still not missing time. You could see him on the sidelines wincing like in insane, just in like in crazy painful fashion. Like he was very clearly struggling badly with injury, but just was not going to leave that game. And you listen to the coaches talk about him and Goff talk about all these guys, all his teammates talk about him. And he's like, there's like, this dude is an absolute savage, one of the toughest guys on planet Earth. And I think if Ragnow has to leave that game and can't come back in after he, I think it was it a shoulder injury in this game? A knee injury. Yeah, he got rolled. Yeah, he got rolled up on by Jared Goff, but he has like another like neck and shoulder injury he's been dealing with, and almost certainly, if he is going to require some more surgery this offseason, I think. And for him to stay out there, I don't know if they win that game with it with him on the bench or with him in the locker room, because Vita Vea is such a problem. They're not going to run the ball nearly as well. He was dominant down by the goal line when they needed him to be, and he was. I think that he really epitomizes what Dan Campbell is about as a coach, as a guy who's trying to build culture in a team. And like, how could anybody on that Lions team even consider not staying on the field and doing whatever it takes when Ragnow is out there doing that against like a guy the size of Vita Vea?
All right.
It is crazy that you went back out there.
Breach, what do you got?
My Breach VP goes to two people who are related. It goes to the Kelce brothers. Kelce, look, that was the most entertaining part of the game was a classic. You throw in the fact that Jason Kelce was shirtless and shotgunning beers with Bills fans every time the Chiefs scored. I mean, that just added a twist that no one saw coming. He was out in the parking lot doing shots with Bills fans. This guy was enjoying life. And then when you throw in the fact that, look, we've spent a couple weeks talking about, is Travis Kelce looking old? The three games before the playoffs, I don't think he had more than 45 yards. And it was just like, well, if he doesn't get going, that's kind of the part that the Chiefs needed if this offense is going to work and they're going to win games in the playoffs. So he goes over 70 yards against the Dolphins, no touchdowns. Then against the Bills, boom, 75 yards, two touchdowns. You have him and Mahomes. We saw the graphic earlier, have now connected 16 times for postseason scores, which is the NFL record, better than Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski. And you throw in all the Taylor Swift reactions we saw, but with a shirtless Jason Kelce in the background. Just, it was the chef's kiss of a perfect night for the Kelce family.
Just to add on to that too, I love Cody Benjamin, so don't, I don't want this to be like me suggesting that he didn't, and he did do a good job. He's like, Jason Kelce, maybe he didn't want to double down. His first headline, I believe, was, look, Jason Kelce crashes Bills fan tailgate, joins Taylor Swift in suite to support Travis Kelce and Chiefs. But then later came back and was like, Travis Kelce celebrate. He buried the lead a little bit on just how shirtless Jason Kelce was when he talked about the heart of me. Yeah, like to me, it was like, oh, cool. He did the heart to Taylor Swift. That's cool. But then it's like, drunken, shirtless Jason Kelce is leaping out of a luxury box into the stands after his brother scores a touchdown. That is wild.
Yeah, I think that's what you do when you retire.
That's where you got to decide. Are you going for the NFL fans or are you going for the 500 million Swifties out there?
That's a good call. That's a good call.
Tough decision. But
by the way, I mean, just like Jason Kelce has to be the number one ranked NFL player you want to get a beer with, right? I mean, remember the Mummers outfit at the Super Bowl, the Super Bowl parade?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think.
He called Mike Lombardi a jabroni.
Well, now he has a podcast. He's just like us. He's a normal person. All right. My MVP is going to be pretty boring. Breach went with two people, which breaks the rules. I'm going with 66,000 people, Breach. Everyone that attended that Lions game and got to enjoy two wins in 8 days, something they hadn't accomplished in 66 years prior. So shout out to Detroit. I mean, that's amazing. Enjoy it, because I don't know what's going to come next week. If you win, great. If you don't, you know, you ran into the bus saw that it's the 49ers. But I'll say this. Tell me what you guys think of this. Who is going to be more aggressive next week calling the game? Dan Campbell or Kyle Shanahan? Exactly. So buckle up, San Francisco. This won't be a cakewalk because Dan Campbell's bringing the knee-biting kit with him.
Well, Wilson, I mean, just to that point, like, we referenced that several times before the Rams-Lions game. Like, all right, the Rams are probably the better team here, and I think could win. But if Dan Campbell gets – it's just like if Dan Campbell – is just aggressive. They're hitting all these fourth downs. They can beat anybody.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And they are really good in the red zone. They're 3-for-4 today, and that carries over. That'll also be something to concern about, but we'll talk about that later in the week. For now, that's a wrap, boys. The divisional rounds are in the book. We're on to the conference championship. Thanks to all you guys who watch and listen and comment. Thank you to producer Harry, for Wilbur, for Johnny Boy. I'm Ryan Wilson. We'll see you guys later.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the Chi?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down! Walk right up to
the side. A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes now streaming. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with the Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. The subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.